Welcome to the Seven Figure Leaders podcast. This podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners, and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. And there you'll find the link to apply. Welcome. And today we've got Michael Potter, founder and managing director of Curve Workplaces. Welcome, Michael.
Yes. Good afternoon, Tom. Thanks for talking to me today.
Pleasure to have you. So take us back to when you first got involved with Curve Workplaces and kind of give us an overview of the journey you've been on since then.
Yeah, so back in 2016, three of us got together and we converted an existing business, but transformed it into something completely different. There was three of us in a serviced office. We went to meet our accountants because we had to select a bookkeeper to help us with that side of things, and they asked, said, how much were you turn over in the first year? And my business partner, Andy Wilkinson, just said, 2 million. That number wasn't based upon anything other than it was the number that was going through his head at the time. So, and in the first year, we turned over 2.12 million, actually. So we hit target, notwithstanding that it was a target that was made up in the moment. The journey of starting it was an exciting one because in terms of what we do, we're an office fit out design and build company. So we refurbish offices for occupiers and landlords and property investors. So our route to market is via the property world and office occupiers. So the first task is obviously to get the phone to ring, which is, going to meet contacts and connections that we've built up over the years. I'm from a property background and construction background, as is my two business partners. So that was and among the three of us, we had the skill sets to kind of get the job done. I'm from a what we'd refer as a professional. I'm a chartered surveyor, so I'm from a professional background. So I was always there in the background, making sure we were doing things properly, and making sure that we had all the right accreditations and contractually we were in a good place. And it developed from there. We had employee number one arrive sort of 9 months into our first year. Employees 2, 3, 4, and 5. They all joined in the subsequent year. In year two, we turned over six million. And year three, 9.8 million, something like that. And as a result of that, we got noticed locally. And when I say locally, I mean the sort of Thames Valley region, M4 corridor. Because we deliberately wanted to get our name out there, but we also, as part of that, what came with that was winning a few Thames Valley Property Awards. We also got acknowledged in the Sunday Times as one of the Sunday Times Fast Track, which was an interesting process as well, because we came third in that. So I think it was probably only end of year three when things like that happen that it dawns on you what you've achieved, because Andy Wilkinson and I came from a larger business where we were well paid, and that business always looked after us, as an entrepreneur, shall I say, you don't get rich overnight. Not once you're not once after the first year, we agreed not to pay ourselves for the first year. So, of course, that obviously had to be done in agreement with Mrs. Potter. And so as a consequence, so while we never actually, you know, we put money in the first year, a bit of seed capital here and there, really to make sure we had a positive cash flow. The reality is the investment in the business is, you know, losing a decent corporate salary for 2 to 3 years. People that have never started businesses don't actually appreciate that. On a personal basis. So that's the journey. And then the last 6 years, because we're in our 10th year now, the trajectory isn't as steep, thankfully, because that would have probably been out of control. But it is still been climbing. And last year, we turned over 25 million, and the furniture business, because we separated the furniture side off, about 4 million, and then we got a lighting business that turned over 2 million. So it's been an interesting journey, and you don't actually appreciate what you're achieving in the moment that you're achieving it. It's only when you look back and have discussions like this, really.
Yeah, exactly. It was very impressive growth, certainly for those first 3 or 4 years or so. So yeah. What is the business model? How do you make money?
So when any office occupier moves needs their office reconfigured, that is when we come into our own. So we don't build buildings out of the ground. We don't build brand new buildings, but we refurbish buildings for occupiers or fit them out for people that are moving. So that is to say, normally tenants take buildings that are open plan floor plate. You need offices, you need breakout areas, you need all of those things. You need carpet, you need air conditioning to be modified, all of those things. That is what we do. It's been increasingly important over the last few years in terms of post-COVID, because office design is very much in the, there's a focus at board level where once before it probably wasn't as much. So it's interesting. We work in every vertical market, so we don't, so the job is interesting in that you're dealing with different businesses and different types of businesses on a daily basis. But it's our skill to be able to take what they require for their new office, translate that into a design, but also build it and make sure that the air conditioning works, that the lighting works, that it complies with the building regulations, all of these things that we take we take full responsibility for that. On occasion, clients will have a professional team, a quantity surveyor or a project manager alongside to ratify some of the things that we're doing. But in essence, we deal direct with clients as well as through other third parties.
Got it. And so what do you think was behind the growth, the rapid growth that you saw for those first few years? Turning over, I think you said 2.1 million your first year, and then five after that. That's fast growth.
Yes, it's an understanding of the market in which we're in, as in geographical market. It's key connections with individuals within that market, and an understanding of how to have a business conversation with people that are moving. So, if you understand who's moving, who's relocating from our contacts in the industry, having a conversation with those people, articulating how you get them from where they are now to where they want to be, designing something that they like at a price that's within their budget, and To them, that's kind of the holy grail. That's what keeps them awake at night. Because let's face it, the larger corporate organizations have real estate teams and facilities teams. But even they have a day job. When we're dealing with clients that don't necessarily have that in-house resource either, that they, we have to make sure that they, that they are comfortable with what we're doing. That's not blinding them with jargon about how an air conditioning system works. We just know that they need it to work. So, and we take full responsibility for that. We do negotiate projects with clients, but equally, we're equally adept to, working in competition whereby there's a beauty parade of designer build companies. They select the design that they like and the price that they like. So our pricing model is always competitively tested. So, so it's the growth from 2 to 6 is really just making sure that, we capitalize on our successes. People understand that you have a track record and building a track record, and one thing leads to another. I think also it's fair to say that when you've got the three shareholders of the business in the room trying to win business, that's always a very good combination. Providing you're open, transparent, honest, they will go with who they trust. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But by and large, our win rate in that period was very, very good. It was far better than 1 in 2. So we'd probably win 2 in 3. Maybe even 3 and 4. As you get bigger and you also move on to more challenging projects and more competitive projects, that win rate diminishes somewhat. But I try and make sure that I'm not too far away from the sales process now, because that's important. It's important, especially when you're dealing with the principals of other businesses, that they understand that it's important to you. Because we, we're talking some quite big numbers in terms of the price of how much these things cost. And you've got to, if you're asking for someone for £2 million, you've got to take it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. And presumably, you actually don't do that many projects a year. You just do a few big ones. Is that?
No, probably 5 larger ones and, or 5 to 10 larger ones, but around approximately 40 overall.
Yeah. Okay.
So probably from year 3 to year 9, where we are now, we've done 40 projects a year. It's just some of them have got bigger, and that's helped our revenue growth.
Yeah. And so as you've grown, and I'm a practical CFO, so naturally the questions I'm interested in are how you've dealt with scaling, bringing new people onto payroll, maintaining profitability without running out of cash.
Yes. So one of the first key hires that we made, one of the people that joined at the end of year 1 was a financial controller. She's now head of finance. And so we put a number of systems in place, and we had a number of systems in place already going back. And so she made sure we had an accountancy practice, Gorange, who to this day still work with us through payroll and all of the other statutory requirements. But it's the management of the day-to-day cash flow, invoices in and invoices out. Our head of finance and her team, a team of 4 now, deal with that. Because I can remember walking around with a folder full of invoices in my briefcase in the early days, and it was I sometimes look back on that fondly. I don't think I would do if I had to do it again, but I knew exactly what each one was for, and I knew exactly when which each one needed paying, and I would just slowly but surely go through all of them every day to make sure that we were ahead, equally making sure that the cash was coming in so that we could pay them. So cash flow is a key component of it, because particularly in the construction industry, you know, we are a high turnover, low margin business. Not low margin in the construction world, but to other industries, you'd suggest that it would be low margin, because, you know, our cost of sales is in the millions as well as our revenue. So that all needs managed, both in and out. And I think the largest challenge for us is, can be clients paying. I've actually noticed, and I think this goes, and I don't, this isn't our industry or any other industry for that matter. I think this is this is just across the board, and I speak to friends of mine in other businesses, it's the same, in that payment terms don't mean payment terms anymore, really. It's there's an acknowledgement. It's almost like an invoice is an acknowledgement, and when they receive an invoice, it's an acknowledgement that they need to pay you at some point in the future. And I'm sad to say, it's actually the larger businesses that are the worst for that. And you might, you know, some talk about how important the supply chain is to them and things like that, but they can often be the worst to pay. So you've got to keep on top of that, because of course we don't want to let our supply chain down, because we need them for the next job. We need to, and it's the right thing to do, but I've been working now for nearly 30 years, and I think people's sense of payment due date is a lot looser now than it's ever been. And I'd welcome your thoughts on that, actually, Tom. But we, you know, we manage our way through it. And all we'd ever ask really in situations like that is that clients are honest with us. Because if somebody says we won't be able to pay you for 3 months, well, that's fine. We can take a view on it. You know, if there's a cash flow squeeze within a client, then, you know, we're not, we can all jump off the cliff together. But the not knowing is the frustrating thing when you're not being paid. Thankfully now we're secure enough, we're fairly comfortable, and we have some fairly significant invoices to be paid. And even recently, when very large invoice wasn't paid, but we knew it wasn't going to be paid and the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to worry about really then at that point. So I think that's the biggest challenge to cash flow. But my biggest gripe around that is the knock-on effect to credit ratings and things like that. Because we might have 15 suppliers on one project, all invoicing. Yeah. We're wanting to pay them on time and things like that. But, you know, if our invoices are not getting paid on time, that's negatively affecting our credit rating. If we're not paying invoices on time, that's negatively affecting our credit rating. And then when you just sit down with a large business, they'll go, oh, yeah, but your credit rating's not great. Yeah, that's typically because of people like you. Because we're, you know, as in the large businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a few construction clients, and it is brutal in terms of other or clients not paying. They generally take as long as they can, and especially the bigger businesses. Because in construction, when you start a project, very often you only receive a very small portion, if any, of the cost that you incur as a business. So you have to pay up front for materials, and you have to pay up front for labor. And sometimes 1 month, 2 months will pass before you actually get that money back from the client. Mm-hmm. So you're out of pocket the whole time. You're the bank, essentially. And it is brutal.
But not only that as well, you've got to, there's the external subcontracted costs that we're liable for. But let's not forget the team that might have spent 3 to 6 months getting us to that point internally. So, you know, we've never missed a salary or bonus payments or anything to our staff. We've never been overdrawn, and we've never borrowed a penny. And the priority is always to pay the staff on time. That's never not happened. But all these people are paying for, and that again is included in the cost. It's included in the cost that we're giving to the client, because it's part of the overhead and profit that is part of the construction value. But that is heavily front loaded with us as well, albeit it's spread across the entire construction project. And then there's the cynic in me as well that, you know, you might get, and be interested to know whether other construction clients have this, but the first two or three payments go through really, really easily. And then once you finish the job, the final payment all of a sudden just gets, it's just, oh, have we had that? Yes. Right. Oh, well, let me see where that is then. And then all of a sudden, because they don't need you anymore, because they're enjoying their new office, they just sit on it for a while longer. And thankfully, actually that is, it's kind of a bit par for the course. I don't want to give people out there ideas, but we can typically see it coming a mile off. So, but yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. So Michael, what's next for the business looking forwards?
So we've got some exciting things happening within our furniture business. We're bringing in some key people into that to grow and scale that business, because at the moment our furniture business sells a lot of furniture via Curb. So it goes hand in hand with the fit out company. So the office furniture company is also expanding, and is over the last year, well, 6 months or so, for getting clients from outside of that. So that's an exciting part as well. Our lighting business as well is very, has got some, and so how the lighting business works is it represents some key manufacturers across Europe and providing lighting on construction projects. So, they're getting products specified on some really exciting stuff with HQ projects with companies that you would have heard of, but I probably get shot if I told you. So that has a lot of growth in it as well. And then it's the slow, it's the steady incremental growth of Curb as well, which always needs attention, making sure the people here are playing to their strengths, making sure the people here have what they need to get the best from themselves. And, you know, it's, um, you know, moving the chess pieces around the chessboard effectively, just to make sure you've got the right people doing the right things in the right place and are happy. That's the main thing.
Yeah. Brilliant, Michael. Well, thank you very much for being a guest. You've shared a lot there, which is going to be really useful, not only to other construction business owners, but to lots of other business owners who are perhaps baffled at how a business can grow so quickly in its first few years. So thank you very much for sharing all of those insights. And we'll make it very easy for anyone who does want to get in touch with you to do so. We'll share a link to your website in the show notes. But yeah, thank you very much. And wishing you and Curve all the best going forward.
Thank you, Tom. And I look forward to speaking to you soon. All the best. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. On that page, you'll find the link to apply.